Welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peake, here with John Wells. Our first guest this morning is Bassam Salem. He's the CEO of Atlas RTX. It's a Park City-based company that's focused on solutions to make customer engagement more efficient and a better experience. Atlas RTX designs engagement products that provide a real-time experience that couples artificial intelligence chatbots, mobile messaging, and human involvement. Bassam Salem, welcome to Cool Science Radio. It's great to have you this morning.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
So we need to start with some definitions. I mean, a lot of us use chatbots daily, but we may not be able to say what a chatbot is if asked. Well, what one is?
I hope I can. So I think one of the hottest buzzwords these days in business is artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. We all hear about AI these days. Chatbots are a certain type of AI, what we call conversational AI. That is, can I have a conversation with a program and have that program act in an essentially human-like way? Mm. So a chatbot is really a program that converses with you as if it were a human.
Right. And so a lot of times we don't know that we actually are speaking with a chatbot. Say it's customer support for some company, or maybe it's even troubleshooting. Help me out here.
Exactly.
Say it's Rocky Mountain Power
service, and tech support.
Yeah, exactly. Tech support. And so they say, "Would you like to have instant messaging?" So you're having this conversation, and I always wonder: is it a real person or is it a chatbot? How do you tell the difference?
You know, our suggestion now, having done this for some time, and now that we all have a lot of consumer experience, is we don't like to be tricked. We don't like to be fooled. So our philosophy is you should know when you're talking to a chatbot and you should know when the human intervenes and takes over. So I believe that over the coming few years, that little bit of trickery will actually go away, and that the best experience is let's have the chatbot do the basic stuff, the mundane stuff, the things that can get the conversation going on the right path and to the right person. And then engage the human when and if necessary. Now, there are some things that may not need a human, and the chatbot can just handle it to closure.
But Sam, I was taking a look at a YouTube video of one of your applications, which was the Park City School District. So that's a pretty good example of how all this works. Why don't you take us through that?
Absolutely. So with Park City School District, we were really excited to find a local organization we all cared about. Much of my team is Park City based, and many of us have kids in the school district. So we were really excited to be able to help in some way. And the use case there is, can we leverage one, mobile messaging? But before we even talk about AI, mobile messaging, the fact that we're all on our phones all of the time now, literally 24/7, it's next to us, it's within 3 feet of us. We don't check email as often. In fact, those of us who are fortunate to be, say under 30, never check email. It's almost impossible to get someone to check email if you're 20 years old. We certainly don't want voicemails. We certainly don't want phone calls. We want to be engaging very asynchronously. That's a technical term that just means not stuck to the phone, but able to respond and put it down and then take it back and respond and put it down. So number one is, can we engage school district parents via their mobile phone over text instead of sending them emails and phones? But second, can we introduce a chatbot that can help parents with some commonly asked questions? So there are lots of us who check the school calendar, for example. Well, why have a human respond to that when the chatbot can know that that's one of the common questions? So sure, I'll provide you a link to the current school calendar. And actually, a lot of parents don't know that it is two-way. So if you respond back, you will get a response from our chatbot. In addition to that, Melinda Colton at the school district will respond to questions that obviously require her. I feel like I've been talking about this a little too long, but I want to add something that is really important to me as an immigrant. And it was one of the key capabilities that we introduced here to the school district is our chatbot happens to speak over 100 languages, and it can actually recognize a foreign language. So it's not only able to speak it, it can recognize it. And one of the cool features we have is if you happen to be a Spanish-speaking parent who may struggle communicating with the school district. You can actually reply in Spanish, and the chatbot will not only detect it, but now start talking back to you in Spanish and act as a translator for school staff so they can message with you English on their side or whatever their native language is, and Spanish or any of another over 100 languages on the parent's side. So that's really, really cool. And it's very meaningful to me, again, as an immigrant, because I see the impact that having parents of children who, you know, might be from another country, actually being aware of what's happening in the school and getting the communication at the same time that English-speaking parents are getting them, and so on.
My background was sales and sales management, and way back, I would use the telephone quite a bit, and I would also set up distributions of my teams so that I could leave a voicemail for everyone, similar to what you do with email or with the various messaging platforms today. But the point I'm trying to make is that I became very comfortable with picking up the phone and calling people. And it's been interesting as I have been working to book people on the show that are younger than I am. And a phone call is very foreign to them. So I'm starting to learn this, that it's better to, you know, text and as you said, emails aren't all often responded by people under 30. But culturally, it's fascinating to me that people don't pick up the phone. They may for a brother or a sister, you know, family members, some sort of what they would consider an intimate conversation versus a business conversation. But people don't use the phone for those sorts of things, do they?
You're absolutely right. So you're going to be surprised by this statistic. Across metro areas in the country these days, answer rates for phone calls are between 3 and 5%. So if you call 100 people, 3 to 5 of them will answer. The rest will send you to voicemail. And of the 3 to 5, I dare say the majority are salespeople. That's why they answered. They're a realtor or someone who sells something. And therefore, you know, they pick up the phone. They might be their next client. One thing you said, though, that I think is really interesting, John, is I think you even used the word intimacy. And if you didn't, that's the word we use, which is...
I did.
Fantastic. We actually, that's good. It's exactly the right word. Believe it or not, because today most of our interactions with our parents, siblings, and children are over SMS, we actually associate more intimacy with SMS engagements than we do phone calls. That's the interesting thing. That is, think about a purchasing relationship. You're buying a car. If you're talking to the car dealership salesperson over the phone, that's the relationship we're all used to. It's the relationship we hate because he or she can now keep us on the phone for a long time and we're having to fight to get off. Whereas if we've gotten to the point where we're texting back and forth with them, mm-hmm. we're actually reaching a level of comfort that's beyond the business. It's actually, you know, more personal, more like the way I communicate with my friends and brother and so on. So it's been this flip over the last 3, 4, 5 years, where now SMS is deemed more intimate. And again, I know that sounds silly to those of us who existed and communicated well before this, but young people are asking each other out and breaking up with each other over SMS. You know, it's pretty crazy. So the world has really changed in the last 5 years.
Well, I think part of that intimacy that you talk about, as you were speaking, I was thinking about why I prefer to communicate by text message, and it's because I have control over when I respond, when I read the message, and it's not, as you say, someone else controlling my time. And so it does put me at ease. And it's funny because we often, as we make this transition and we see this flip, I think that people are holding on to, it used to be this way where we spoke, you know, voice to voice.
Exactly.
And we've lost something, but you're sort of saying that it's not that we've lost something, it's that we're transitioning into a different phase of how we have our best and highest communication.
Absolutely. In fact, since this is a science show, we can talk about the word synchronous, you know, the things happening at the same time or at the same place. And if you think about telephone calls, that was the first time we broke synchronicity. Because we could be talking to someone at the same time, but not at the same place. Whereas before phone calls, we had to have both. And now we're just arguing that asynchronicity or asynchronous communication is really taking away time and place. That is, I don't have to be there at the same exact moment. I can send a message, put the phone down. The other person may be completing some other task. They see it. They reply back. And it may just be a little bit more protracted. Yes, it's less personal from my perspective as well. But it is deemed conversation. We're having a conversation. We just happen to be miles apart and potentially not synchronously communicating. So it's truly a shift in how we all talk.
So going back to the school district, one of the challenges of the school district is to reach every far-reaching segment of the population of families in the school district. Many of these don't have access to Wi-Fi, for example. And so it makes a lot of sense that the text alert system would be more widely used. And then I would imagine, and I'm wondering about this, with the language barrier, does it filter throughout, say, the Spanish-speaking community that, hey, if you get this text alert, you can answer in Spanish, or you can even maybe say, I don't understand, no entiendo, in Spanish, back, and then it'll be sent to you. But I suppose if you sign up for it, you sign up for it in your native language. How does that work?
Yes, really good question, Lynn. So you can either, when you go to the school district's website, it actually offers you a Spanish registration versus an English registration. But even if you were to register in English or Spanish, I'd love any parent out there to try this, try speaking back in a Chinese character set, speaking Mandarin or Cantonese or Arabic or Farsi or any of over 100 languages, it will detect it and it will switch to that and it will remember that that is the language you spoke. So next time an announcement comes out from the school district, it will come to you in the last language you used. So it's really cool. And we support Samoan and Tongan languages. I mean, it's everything. We support Hmong. I had to look up Hmong. We support Hmong. So it's very, very cool.
Yeah. It's fascinating. I believe that one of the hallmarks of your definition of engagement is, and I'll just go through the list, there's five pieces: personalized engagement, fast follow-up, automated follow-up, objection handling, and soliciting feedback often. Are those components in most solutions that you put together?
Yes, absolutely. The whole premise is we as consumers today expect everything now. I expect my question answered now. No one wants to wait on a live chat session. If you wait for 18 seconds and it just says, please wait, people are just going to close the browser. People want to engage now. So immediacy is really, really important. And this is why we think AI can be there to help the human. Let's bring in AI to provide that access to information the way we all demand it these days. We even see now with orders, online orders, not only do we want to be able to order it now, but we expect it to arrive tonight, tomorrow morning. We're frustrated that it's going to take 2 or 3 days. You know, it's amazing how the cadence of life has changed in the last decade or so.
And oftentimes in sales, you want to get to the core objection that a customer may have, and the customer may not give you that objection up front immediately. You kind of have to dig for it to find out what may be holding them back from going to the next step. How were you able to accomplish that with the AI chatbots?
So really good question. One of our most compelling and successful use cases these days is in new home sales. So we actually have quite a few large home builders who use us, including Woodside Homes, headquartered here in Utah. The idea is, instead of visiting a model home and leaving and then getting 14 voicemails from the salesperson trying to reach you because you didn't buy the home, what if the brand sent out a chatbot quick message to you, just following up and seeing if you're interested and asking for feedback? It's much less invasive. As you were alluding to, Lynn, it's you're in control. You can respond when you want and say what you want. What we found is a lot more people respond, something to the tune of 60, 70, or 80% of the people respond instead of single digits. And second, they're unbelievably honest. They're brutally honest. So they will tell you, oh my gosh, this place is completely overpriced. Have you looked across the street? Or I can't stand your floor plans. And this is information that would have otherwise been completely unavailable to a home builder. Now they have that information and they can respond back, whether it's handling the objection if they can, or cross-selling them. That's fine. If you don't like a modern look, we actually have a community 4 miles down the road.
We have other properties.
We have other properties, exactly. So it comes across, so it's effective for the seller, for the company, because they're able to access people and be able to engage them and remediate objections. But likewise, it's much more comfortable for the buyer because mm-hmm. I'm not getting phone calls from people. I can just express my interest or lack thereof. I can get that remediated and I can say, well, fine, if you can give me this for that, in this place, then I want to know. It's a great experience for both sides, and it's all enabled by mobile messaging and AI together.
Which is the industry where you see the most growth potential for Atlas RTX? I mean, as you talk about the school application, I think that's huge. I'm seeing here on your website, Hewlett-Packard's a client, Dell, Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority, which is kind of interesting in the whole visitors realm.
Yeah, absolutely. Lynn, that's our biggest, if you were to ask me what is our biggest strategic challenge right now, it's focusing. We're a somewhat small company. I used to say we were tiny, but now we're almost 20 people, so we're getting there in Park City. But we cannot target everything and we can't solve everything. So we're really trying to focus on sort of quick wins. Where are the places where we can have the biggest impact soonest? And certainly education is one potential, K-12 education, higher education. We actually have Purdue now as a client as of a month and a half ago. Think of everyone who goes to a website or to Purdue's website. It's actually Krannert School of Business at Purdue, so the business school there. How many people go there to find out about the program and GMAT scores to get in and whether there's financial aid and what can I expect to make when I graduate with an MBA from Krannert and so on? Well, why not have a chatbot there for you at 11:30 at night when you're asking those questions? So education, both higher and lower, is very plausible. I think tourism and events is another one, as you allude to with LVCVA, Las Vegas. The thought of coming into a town and instead of having to download an app or do something that I may not know, imagine arriving at the airport and saying and seeing, you know, welcome to Salt Lake City. Please text here and we'll provide you a concierge service. You can ask us any question about where to go eat or where to stay or what to visit, what's open. Oh, and do it in any language. So if you happen to be from China, go ahead and speak Mandarin or Cantonese and we'll take care of you. Oh, and there's a human there as well who will take care of you. So events, the same sort of use case kind of applies there. And I could keep going, but the problem really is there are so many use cases because I think this is a macro trend over the next decade. It's this notion of leveraging artificial intelligence to help humans do more of what they want to and less of what they don't. And there's just unbelievable amounts of use cases for that.
The frustration over voicemail systems, automated voice systems, where, you know, you're supposed to select one if you want to make a deposit, select two if you want to make a withdrawal, you know, whatever it is. And when you're supposed to have a voice, you're supposed to voice your request, and then often they don't understand what you say. There's lots and lots of frustrations. It's very imperfect system. But with artificial intelligence, we're hoping, the hope is, that the technology is already there to make it much smarter and alleviate a lot of frustration that we feel within those systems that we get routed to. Because what I think a lot of people do is just press zero for a real person.
To a human, exactly.
Right.
I think we're 5, 6, 7 years away from being able to have much more comfortable experiences speaking to our systems. So the reason today that we do messaging-based communication is because with messaging-based communication, there is no issue with accent. There's no issue with accidentally missing a word. You know, the worst that happens is maybe they mistype or misspell a word. That's about as bad as it gets. But we theoretically, once we build the knowledge bases, these AI programs are smart enough to know how to handle a parent in Park City, for example. Adding on the speech component will then be a pretty straightforward capability. Once the state of the art is there. Today, the state of the art is not quite there, and I explain it by saying, think about it at home when you if you have an Alexa or whether you use Siri. You know, 3 out of the 5 people might have it understand them completely. Mm-hmm. But 1 or 2 are always frustrated. Like, it just never seems to understand me, and I don't even have an accent, and it doesn't seem to understand me. Without training these programs for a person's voice, today's state of the art is still not close enough to perfect. But I think we're 5 years away, and at that point, it will be amazing. This concept of walking around your house and just speaking into the ether, mm-hmm. and having your house respond and answer you and order things for you and tell you what the weather outside is. And I think that's the next frontier, is not even having it be tethered to your phone, but it's just sort of omnipresent. It's all around you, and you have access to these artificial intelligence capabilities just supporting our lives day to day.
Fascinating. If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Bassam Salem. He's the CEO of Atlas RTX, a Park City company. It's focused on solutions to make customer engagement more efficient and a better experience. I'm going to go back to the chatbots and the feedback that you would get from a prospective customer, for an example. It would be great, and I'm sure you do this, to take all of that feedback and roll it up and, you know, sort of synthesize it and get it to the people that are running the company, because oftentimes their idea of their product and the types of solutions that they solve are not necessarily what's really going on in the real world.
You're absolutely right. And we are now getting to the point where we've had clients long enough, 2 or 3 years, where we have really large amounts of data and some good context on that data. So we know, for example, in the home builder use case, the people who liked the home, what they liked, and the people who disliked the home, what they disliked, by community, so by the different model home areas. And you're absolutely right, the amount of synthesized data that we can generate that is actionable. You know, your price point is a little too high here. People are really liking single-story floor plans in this area. It's absolutely the case. And we can take it a step higher than that over the coming years as we work with more and more home builders. We can actually start to build patterns by geography and potentially by price point and all sorts of different variables that we can make connections to, saying, you know, in this particular area, we know about so many home buyers. We can tell you that what people like in this area is a price point between X and Y, single-story floor plans. They want a 3-car garage, and so on.
Right.
You know, we can really nail it down and provide that data as value. So absolutely.
3% of the people in Park City are native. 97% came from somewhere else. Lynn came from Montana. I came from Boston. I've never met anybody that's come here from Egypt. Tell us your story.
I wish I could say it was my decision. I can't take credit for it. My parents had the foresight in the early 80s to immigrate to this country. And I'm fortunate to reap the rewards of having been able to grow up here and benefit from a great country and a great place to live. So we came as foreign students to Salt Lake City and went to the University of Utah. Both my parents did, and then all 3 children did, until we eventually did the American immigrant thing. We had H-1Bs and then green cards and then eventually citizenship. So I jokingly say I'm not an immigration attorney, but I can play one on television if needed. I know how the system works.
That's great.
And the American dream, really. You're highly educated. You have, three, 4, 5 degrees. You got your first master's at age 21, and you've been professionally programming since you were 15 years old.
You know, one of the most impactful, I was just telling the story to my team a couple of days ago, and I actually got emotional about it because I still remember my parents buying me my first computer in Egypt. And it must have been 2-3 months' salary for them to buy me that computer.
Wow.
When I was 11 or 12. And I fell in love with programming back then, and it really started me on this career. And I'm fortunate to have been able to write it up. As we were talking, John, you've been in tech for a long time. That was the heyday. That was the genesis of technology, really, is the early 80s, mm-hmm. When PCs were just coming about. So I've really appreciated that my whole life, and that's why I started early. I've been a nerd my whole life.
You launched Atlas RTX in 2016, I believe. What have been the relative challenges and the benefits of launching from right here in Park City, Utah?
It's the location is unbelievable. It's great to be near home, but admittedly, recruiting talent from Salt Lake is actually quite a bit harder. It's funny how, again, as the saying goes, it's much farther to go from Salt Lake City to Park City than it is to go from Park City to Salt Lake. The distances are different.
I
would say distances are a bit of a challenge. Real estate is quite expensive up here, so to find office space that works is expensive. Having said that, the amount of talent here that is from everywhere else, from Boston and elsewhere, is it was one of the cities you guys are from. It's really cool to be able to tap into these folks who say, I'd love to be able to work for a startup right here and not go to the Valley. So I'll keep it at that. But it's been great to build something with people who live here.
Yeah. We've got to wrap this up, but before we let you go, I wanted to ask you quickly about the Utah Technology Council. You're heavily involved in that.
Yes. There are a number of organizations that have really rallied tech in Utah and really help us all succeed and grow. And if you think about what the tech scene in Utah looks like now vis-a-vis 10 years ago or 20 years ago when it was almost non-existent with the exception of WordPerfect and Novell, I really give credit to organizations like the Utah Technology Council. It's unbelievable the amount of collaboration and assistance that we all in tech do to help one another. It's such a small ecosystem. We all know each other, and I'm really, really a big fan of Utah Tech, and I'm a big proponent of it. I think it's just the beginning. 20 years from now, we will look back and not believe how far we've come.
Yeah. Bassam Salem, he's the CEO of Atlas RTX. It's a Park City-based company. We're so glad you could come by the studios this morning and tell us all about your company.
Thank you so much for your time. Thanks.